A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus Champions League edition of the Rabona podcast. I am Musa Kwonga, joined by Ryan Hun. Michael De Silva is indisposed.
Probably asleep. We're doing this straight after the games.
Everyone else is asleep. Everyone else in this corner of Berlin as we broadcast from Rabona Towers.
It's the Night Owl special.
Indeed it is. And let's get straight into it, fortified by coffee. Starting with Manchester United against Barcelona. United defeated 1-0, but not unbowed at Old Trafford.
No, man. But I don't think that's a terrible result.
It's a good result. Oh, no, not a good result. No, it's a fair result. And in the context of both the team's seasons, I think it's absolutely fine. Barcelona were below par. They lacked dynamism. That was partly due to the tactics because Philippe Coutinho was as disappointing as many onlookers feared, including Barcelona fans. And they lacked width, Barcelona throughout, and pace, which they've done away from home, weirdly enough, quite a few times in the late stage Champions League under Valverde. But very solid 1-0 win. Never really got out of third gear, I would say. But that was also credit to United.
I think the key part of that game was midfield, and starting McTominay was a really good call, I think, from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think his dynamism and his energy in the middle of midfield for United, I think, meant that United midfield never really felt like it was getting overran.
This is a common theme with them, though. When they start McTominay over Matic in big matches, he has not just the legs, but the positional sense, and I think the perceptiveness, you know, when the ball is breaking, to anticipate, and also to initiate the play, the forward play.
Yeah, well, I think Barcelona's poorest player on the night was probably Sergio Busquets. And I don't think that's any fluke that was to do with McTominay being really busy in midfield, harrying around, pushed higher up. United pressed really well.
I think so, yeah.
But also, Barcelona did have, well, they attempted something like over 800 passes. Well, they made 731 passes, according to StatZone, compared to United's 325. So they made they attempted over 800 passes and had a pass completion rate of almost 91%. I mean, I kind of wrote a tweet about, there was something on the commentary on BT Sports saying that Barcelona were really, really sloppy. And I don't know, I just didn't really buy that. I didn't think it was that kind of hyperbolic, you know.
You know, it reminded me of a little bit, is Bayern's performance against Liverpool at Anfield, of which I was very critical, but then acknowledging that Bayern were playing a very particular role. I was disappointed with Thiago in that tie, but Thiago, as others pointed out, who are actually far more qualified than me to speak on this, Thiago was brilliant
in
the limited role, yeah. Mm. And I felt he should have been more ambitious.
Do you know what I think it is, actually? And I'm going to kind of come maybe with a bit of a scorcher. It's not really a scorcher, it's just so timid.
Go on, scorcher.
It's such a timid take.
Scorcher away.
But I think a lot of the times you notice when, especially in the UK commentary of Champions League games with clubs that aren't UK teams.
Yeah.
And this is just a bit of a hunch. I think they're hoping to see the very, very best of those players like Lionel Messi that they don't see week in, week out. So when they don't perform at these majestic levels, it's something, oh, something's up, or oh God, they're sloppy. Whereas actually, no, give United credit where it's due. And it's not always their fault for being poor. You know, Lionel Messi is not going to be able to perform at the level that he does every single week when as soon as he gets the ball, he has three players around him in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. They're not playing a pub side.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, credit United for doing well. Yeah, Barcelona weren't great, but they were nowhere near as bad as they were kind of getting slated for on the commentary. And like, The guy had his nose broken.
And he had an incredibly narrow configuration ahead of him. He didn't have Malcolm ahead of him or Dembele.
He made the goal.
Was playing well, exactly.
And he played some unbelievable passes, especially in the second half. He made some really great ones in the first half as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it was one of those. I think United did their job really well.
Right.
They stopped Barcelona from getting too far out in front. They kept in the tie. I think Barcelona maybe felt a little bit rattled. Maybe didn't expect United to press them as high or as efficiently as they did.
And that's right. Could have had an equaliser, actually, with a Diego Dalo.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, lots of room for optimism. And I think the good thing about Solskjaer afterwards was that he struck, I think, the right tone. There was an element of, you know, there was some happiness with what had gone right, but there was also a disappointment. I think that's really important for United to have a manager. You know, Solskjaer may be the right person, the long term may not be, but the point is this, at this stage, he is not only saying, but I think doing all the right things.
Mm.
Tactically, there's not really much you could have faulted him for. The goal went in early, but after that, United regrouped really well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the main regret is, I think he mentioned it after, was that United didn't have a shot on target all game,
yeah.
Which I think was, at home, I think a bit disappointing. And actually, if I was going to, I don't want to be too critical of United, because I think they did really well. I think the main criticism I would point out was down the right-hand side, actually. I think Ashley Young attempted something like 12 crosses or 13 crosses in the game. I don't think he completed one. That to me, and there will probably be some way more qualified coaches out there that can correct me on this, so please do. But if United are pressing Barcelona in the way that they were, then when they did have the ball, it seemed to me to be a bit of a waste just to attempt crosses.
Yeah.
Destabilizing that midfield and especially putting pressure on, then keeping the ball on the floor and playing through, especially when you have people like Rashford and Lukaku on the pitch and Pogba in a number, well, an 8 or a 10 role. I just thought that was a real...
A right
they
back,
weren't as efficient yeah. when they had the ball as they could have been. I thought they made quite poor decisions with the ball a lot of the time.
A right back with outstanding delivery changes that team.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it for Liverpool as a prime example. You know, well, when they have full backs who can cross the ball like that, we were bigging up DJ Andy Robertson.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they're still definitely in the tie.
So, they are indeed.
You know, I mean, Barcelona were well out ahead in front against Roma last year.
And the trauma is still there.
Yeah, I mean, the only difference is obviously that they're now at home. I don't think United have beaten Barcelona at the Nou Camp ever. Is that apparently a thing? I think that's what they said.
Oh, Solskjaer has but, got you know, history. He's got form at the Nou Camp, so we'll see.
Do you want to go to the Nou Camp under the leadership of the guy who scored that goal? Oh, my God.
It's going to be unbearable, isn't it?
Man United social media that next week is going to be...
Unbearable.
It's going to be insert kiss that, fingers emoji.
Chef's kiss.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a game to make massively sweeping calls. I thought United did well. I thought Barcelona could have been better. That's it. End of the podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, enjoy.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
It's a bit of late night nuance.
Is it late night nuance? We should call it that.
New chilled compilation that we're gonna do.
The chill cast. Lounge jacket.
Welcome to Jazz FM's Football Nuance podcast.
Do you know what? The scary thing is that would actually go viral. If we did a jazz podcast.
I'm pretty sure I've got a cord blazer knocking around some cigarette holder.
Oh my goodness.
Should we move on to the other game?
Ajax-Juventus. Ajax-Juventus, yeah.
We managed to simultaneously watch two games at once and then re-up on the highlights of some of the bits we missed straight after.
Ajax, love Ajax.
Can I say before we do start, it's really hard to watch two football games at once.
Yeah, it is very hard.
My eyes.
Very hard. We managed. Ajax, really just impressively resilient. Missed a couple of good early opportunities and went a goal down. Cristiano scored. It was a very good finish from him. I think it was interesting, actually, when he scored the goal, he should have been tracked, you said, by Frankie de Jong.
Yeah, I think de Jong, should have tracked.
What's impressive about the run, the movement, is that the cross actually is hit fairly early.
Mm.
So when the ball's travelling for quite a distance, so he's making this diagonal run very, very sharp. And if you look at it, he almost arrives at almost at sort of 90 degrees to the ball, which is a very difficult run to mark. And so when he makes the header in the end, the Ajax keeper... I think is actually almost anticipating a slightly better angle on the header and therefore doesn't make the best effort at the save. But, I mean, that is just textbook movement. Well, I say textbook, but very few forwards can move with that elusiveness in the area.
Yeah, and also I think where the ball was placed is that sweet spot, that channel
Yeah, it was just, it's kind difficult.
Of too, it's too far for Onana to come out there.
Do you know what it's like? It was like the Bergkamp to Ljungberg. You know, yeah. When Bergkamp would deliver the ball in behind the fullback, well, the centre-back on the heels, and Ljungberg would make the very steep run. So then the centre-back's in this terrible position of having to watch two directions at once, turn the head twice, and that was it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe it's a little bit too critical to say maybe Onana could have done better, but...
I think he was anticipating a better header, and I think you're right. I think once, it's, you know, it was like...
Just a keeper of that quality as well, I thought he maybe and managed to get a hand to it.
It reminded me of those penalty shootouts when the shootout actually is not hit that well, and the keeper's expecting it to go right in the corner, so it goes under the keeper's body. Does that make sense? It happened in the Carabao Cup final when Kepa expected a better penalty, went under his body. But Ajax came back into it very impressively. Neres, who's just been capped by Brazil, I think, this season, scored an absolute beauty. The Neres goal is brilliant because it's just one small mistake by Cancelo. I think a long ball is played. Cancelo doesn't control it on the right flank, and Neres is onto him, and then just cuts inside. But it actually is so interesting about the margins for success and failure at this level. Cancelo made one mistake. They were a goal up. They were looking absolutely fine, Juventus. Not cruising, but you know.
The weird thing about this was that I think Ajax should have gone ahead. They had that Van der Beek chance.
Right.
Which he was stretching for, but it missed by a whisker.
Yeah.
And actually, they seemed to be really in control of the game, like dominating the ball. Thought De Jong was really good. Thought De Ligt was really good. Tadic was brilliant. Neres, great. Ziyech, great. I know it's very easy to jump on a team in the Champions League that's maybe a little bit of an underdog, you know, like that great Monaco side from a few years ago.
Right.
However, I really, really enjoy watching this Ajax team. Saying that, some of the games I've seen them in the Eredivisie this season, they've not been anywhere near this level and they've not been this fun to watch sometimes. But currently in the Champions League, from all the teams that are left, I think they're the team that excites me the most to watch.
There is something sad about that. You look at, you mentioned that Monaco team. If we look again at that 11 that Jardim was coaching, it's incredible that all those players occupied the same dressing room. Mm. It's wild. But these are generational talent. Yeah. Like Bernardo Silva is the best Portuguese player of his generation, and Mbappe arguably the best French player, you know, for Monaco. And you look now at Ajax, these are some of the best players of their generation for their respective countries. That's an incredible, you know, group of...
And the thing that I really like about the Champions League, for all its faults, and it does have many faults as a competition, I think, but you tend to occasionally get a side like that that comes through to the late stages of the knockout or even goes to the final. So the Atleti team that played Real Madrid the year that Real won the Decima, that Atleti side was...
ridiculous.
A really popular side to watch. A lot of people really got behind that side. The Borussia Dortmund side of 2013 that went to the final against Bayern. Incredibly exciting to watch. That amazing tie against Real.
I think Atleti had the worst draw. They had to beat Bayern and Barca.
Yeah.
And so by the time they got to the final, they'd almost punched themselves out. And then they lost Diego Costa.
Yeah.
I think that was the same year or the year
that
after.
That was the one he went off injured right at the beginning.
Yeah, that was awful. And that whole year, they had basically been lights out, brilliant.
Yeah. And then you had Monaco from a few years ago. You had the Juve side against Barcelona in 2015.
It reminds me of, this is more common in basketball when you have the March Madness, this is the fairy tale teams, the Cinderella teams.
Yeah, I mean, describing clubs like Atletico Madrid and Juventus and Ajax as, you know, Cinderella or kind of like their minnows is...
In
the context of like...
Yeah, in the context of result, in the context of, I mean, look, I still believe...
Maybe not Juve now.
The Atleti La Liga victory of 2013-14 is one of the great sporting achievements of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
If you consider what they went up against in terms of resources and out of this world, but as a coaching achievement. So it's almost, it's sad because Ajax, and you make the great point, they're a team that may not win this year, but I feel they've defined this year. Like they are a team that, you look 5 years later, I might not be able to tell you what the final was like or even who won the tournament, but I remember to tell you about watching Ajax beat Real and what that meant and how it felt in terms of a seminal moment. It felt like football changing. And it's funny, actually, when we look at football, this is one I want to mention before I go on to the next sort of games, but it's funny in football how often the pivotal points in the sport are not actually the finals.
It's the Dutch side of 74.
Right, exactly. It's moments. It's particular performances. Like when Liverpool beat Nottingham Forest 5-0, right? That game, we hadn't seen that kind of football before.
Mm.
Or when Arsenal, I always talk about this, and Arsenal beat West Ham 4-0. They were four goals up in the first half. And Overmars and Bergkamp just did things we hadn't seen before. And then I remember United fans being scared because people were thinking, this is going to be a problem for the next 10 years and we have to deal with this. We've got to sort this out. And I think that was the Ajax Real moment. Whatever happens this year in the Champions League, I'll be very surprised if we see a moment more seminal.
Well, I mean, the game finished 1-1, and I think that's probably a better result for Ajax than it is for Juve.
Yeah.
Because as we've seen, Ajax went into the home of the, three in a row champions, European champions, and completely played them off the park.
No
fear. And I would not expect Ajax to go there and play with any fear whatsoever. I think it's another free hit for them. You saw in the first game, in the first leg, that they can dominate Juve with the ball. And actually, I think maybe I wouldn't be surprised to see Ajax go through that tie.
I wouldn't either, actually. I think they're absolutely entitled to feel confident.
Mm. So, yeah, I mean, they could have and should have got a couple more tonight, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Should take a quick break and then wrap up the other games.
For sure, let's do it.
Right, back from the break. I have a quick question, actually.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe this is me taking full advantage of Michael not being here. But what does to dare is to do mean?
I have no idea. There's a lot of these Latin mottos that these clubs have, and I look at some of them and go, I'm not sure the Latin's actually the best there.
It's really always confused me.
To dare is to do well. I mean, Spurs definitely did dare against City.
And they definitely did.
They did, yeah. Sound like Miss Yellett got my hair, dude. Yeah, Spurs winning 1-0. A deserved result. You can see the penalty early. You save it. You grind back into the game. You have a midfield performance like that from Winks, Wanyama and Sissoko. People were mocking that before the game. They were mocking that midfield.
Yeah, I don't like the stick that Sissoko gets. Really.
Well, I get why he was criticised early on, because he was poor in his first season, when Spurs actually really were hoping he would be a catalyst for something much greater. He was disappointing. But this year,
it's been brilliant.
It's been fantastic.
It felt like one of those games that any result would have maybe felt deserved.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right. Well, exactly. And that's to my point. In a hard-fought game, and I think I might have said this before on a podcast, this was a game that Guardiola was fearing.
Yeah.
Because Pochettino's really smart and he can play Guardiola at his own game. He can play the high intensity. He can contain if he needs to. He can play different ways. And it was so fitting that Son should score the goal, the winning goal, because when Kane has been missing, he has stepped up time and again.
That's massively. And he is our Rabona Selects this week, so please check the Rabona Twitter account.
He is. What a player.
Rabona Mag.
And I'm going to mention that I'm actually going to write a different piece on this maybe next week. But just to sort of say that it was funny, Son is so under the radar that even when he scored the winner, he wasn't trending. I was looking at all the trends. I was like, wait a minute. He scored the winning goal. Who's trending? Tottenham.
Kane.
Guardiola. Kane. De Bruyne, who'd barely been on. And Mahrez. Son was not trending. I was absolutely wild that that happens.
Yeah. Hugo Lloris, a rare good moment for him in recent months.
I feel quite smug about that, because I actually wrote a piece saying that Lloris is that kind of player who is always a few matches away from a redemptive moment.
Yeah, I mean, and like we said on the last podcast, players miss penalties.
They do miss penalties, and you've got to give Lloris credit for that,
yeah,
because
I mean,
he came up big.
Not an amazing penalty, but decent save.
Yeah.
And it's funny how, I mean, just stating the obvious, but that goal goes in really early, wasn't it? And I think that could have been a completely, completely different game. And then, ironically, the Spurs goal came completely against the run of play. I mean, I thought City were much better second half, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. Very weird. There's been a lot of stuff about Guardiola's inability to win away games in the Champions League and how he do you know what? I'm going to say something here. There's something about Champions League games that it's like, you know when you're playing a computer game and if you get enough, you build the kind of like the bar up enough and you get like turbo mode for 30 seconds or something. It's like football banter has hit the turbo mode.
Do you know what I mean?
There were so many memes flying everywhere about Guardiola overthinking tactics.
The weird thing about one thing I will say in defense of those memes and in defense of all that banter is, his away record is really bad.
It is
11% of wins in away in it's like just over 11% of wins in Champions League quarterfinals, I think it's really bad. And it was like Suarez not scoring away from, I mean, Suarez hadn't scored away from home for a long time. And you know, if you look at the Suarez performances, taking away Guardiola, Suarez was playing badly in those matches. He was. And I think that Guardiola, in away games, I wonder if it does weigh on him. if people keep, because he's someone who's sensitive to criticism, I wonder if he is thinking, actually, I've got to try this, force the pace. But also the flip side is away games and Champions League matches are just, they're not easy to win.
No.
And part of me just thinks, well, the sensible thing is get a good result, get a draw, get out of jail, go back to your place and just batter them.
Mm.
I mean, like Mourinho had that whole thing. Mourinho had a whole thing where I think for 8 years, Mourinho did not lose at home in a league, 8 consecutive years. And Mourinho was basically like away games, draw them, don't lose them, come back to ours, beat them. He built two empires doing that.
Yeah. Huge, huge cliche, but just keeping the tie. And exactly. Man City are completely in the tie.
Yeah.
Sorry, Spurs fans, but if Manchester City win the second leg 5-0, on paper, it's not going to look that wild. They're just that kind of team. They've struggled against some teams this season that they shouldn't have struggled against. And I'm not saying that Spurs are a side that they shouldn't have struggled against. I think, like you said, and we've said on the podcast, out of all the draws that City could have got, this is probably the one that Guardiola least wanted.
Yeah.
We've said it so many times. Spurs are a tough, tough side to
play
against,
to play,
especially
yeah.
over two legs. And actually, I think that how Son plays in the absence of Kane, like you said, you don't want to ever lose a player like Harry Kane. But I think for the away leg, I actually think it maybe might benefit Spurs a little bit in terms of how they play.
Well, you've got Lucas Moura and you've got Son. You've got Eriksen feeding them. And you've got that midfield three of Winks, Sissoko and Wanyama. That's robust.
Yeah.
That's not going to give you much when you're attacking them. And on the break, those players have got enough guile between them, the three midfielders, to release Eriksen and release those players in wide positions. And the great thing about that, those players, Moura and Son, is that they attack the space outside the fullback and between the fullback and the centre back.
And they can be so hard yeah. to track.
They disrupt you playing out from the back. They're really, that's why Guardiola was worried, I think, because not only do they match up well against City, but Guardiola, you know, Pochettino knows him. He knows what Pep's doing.
Yeah. The absence of Kane actually gives Pep, I think, more of a headache in terms of how he's going to play that second leg, weirdly.
Right. Hey, Dele Alli as a false nine or as an out and out.
Just horrible. Do you know what I mean? It's yeah. just, I think it throws another element of
the weird thing is, I think Pep's also really enjoying it. Oh my goodness, I'm up against it. I think he kind of loves that.
Pep's like, ooh, challenge.
Fabulous, yeah.
Exactly. A challenger enters. One quick thing before we move on.
Yep.
On the benches, if you like, can you still call them benches? In Spurs' new stadium, cup holders. Big fan of that. Big fan of that.
Yeah.
Saw Poch's water bottle just in the cup holder next to him on his seat, like in the cinema. Like
the electric cinema in like Notting Hill.
Like he's upgraded at the Poch
seats.
Yeah, cinema.
Yeah, the IMAX.
Actually, I was really into that.
Not so fan of what was on the benches. De Bruyne, what was that about? Segue.
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Bit weird. Came on late. Looked actually quite dangerous. We played a couple of dangerous balls in, one or two dangerous balls in, from that sort of wide right position when he whips it in across a sort of 6 yard box.
City go away to Palace on Sunday, so you can't imagine he's been rested for that, I don't think, unless he's not entirely fully fit, and therefore he may start against Palace and therefore be rested again against Spurs next week.
I think Guido just having faith in his players to get the job done. I think that was the thing. I wasn't like any sort of slight in De Bruyne. I think he was just, the players on the pitch can get the job done, but maybe slightly below yeah. par. Liverpool-Porto.
Yeah.
2-0.
Do you know what? Actually, I think this might be the most intriguing one in the tie, in the round, sorry. I think Liverpool would be really disappointed with this result because they, 2-0 up in the first 25 minutes.
Should have been out of sight.
Should have been out of sight at halftime. Never got out of sight. Porto had chances and we've seen that Porto can overturn deficits at home in the second leg of the Champions League. I don't think this is by any means done this tie.
I'll take your lead on that. I mean, it's nice for Liverpool to have Naby Keita scoring his first goal in Champions League this season. That's great for them. Scored a nice team goal to make it 2-0 and, with Firmino. But yeah, Liverpool, you'd expect, I mean, there was a lot of people expecting them to sort of like breeze through. But again, it's the old cliche, an early goal from Porto and the complexion of this changes.
And cliche central this podcast.
It has been, but it's because that's a reflection of the football. As exhilarating as the second round was, the quarterfinal has fizzled and kind of gone to form. You're not looking at any of these results and going, oh, that's wildly unexpected.
No, I mean, and actually the really good thing I think about this round is that none of them are done. There's nothing
yeah,
really
that's true.
That's completely decided. You know, if Liverpool had put 4 or 5 past Porto, which they probably should have done, then you'd be
right
pretty comfortable, especially with Liverpool's defensive record this season. But, you know, Marega could have had a couple for Porto. You wonder whether playing at home, that's going to kind of, those might go in to just a 2-goal lead. I mean, keeping a clean sheet was key, yeah, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. Porto something have, about this
Porto
draw.
Have nothing to lose though. Porto really.
And that can be super dangerous at this stage of the Champions League. Really dangerous. You saw it with Ajax in the last round.
And one thing we need to also add in as a variable, as a factor, is this is a close championship race in the Premier League. And you look at Barcelona, and I think it's impossible to view Barca's victory over United outside the context of beating Atleti very late in a title decider. Let's also comprehend that Barca were pretty much out on their feet by the end of that game. The intensity of that match.
That was really intense.
To play Atleti at full pelt and then come 4 days later away from home and to beat a United side who'd been rested for 10 days, I think.
And to still essentially control the game.
I mean,
whilst not being a top gear.
That's an extraordinary achievement. And we're going to need to see the same kind of match control from Liverpool in their Champions League fixtures if they continue to progress, which they should do. So, I mean, this is no disrespect to Liverpool. It's just a reflection of the very high standards they set themselves this season. The 2-0 win over Porto, par for the course. Maybe a goal better would have done better. But I think Liverpool should just look for a nice conservative 1-0 early goal.
Or just manage the game like they did away to Bayern. Yeah. They were never, ever really in trouble.
No. That is, in its context, one of the most impressive Liverpool performances I've seen in a while.
Like you say, in context, I think it was probably their most impressive.
It was a defining performance of the season. It was really defining, wasn't it?
It was just, with the lack of fuss that they dealt with it, it was really impressive. No drama.
Right.
Like, in, get the money, out.
Like Doom, the super villain. Well, it's funny, if you consider what Bayern did to Dortmund, and that Liverpool did that just a few weeks before in the Champions League, you realise how impressive that performance actually is.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We're recording this ahead of Arsenal's 5-0 defeat at home to Napoli.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not feeling very confident about that game.
No, you're really not. You're really not.
When was the last time I felt confident about an Arsenal game?
The derby?
I'm never confident about that.
I'm being terrible. It's difficult with Arsenal right now, isn't it? I mean, the form is... Not the form. The form's fairly good, but it's just the performances, isn't it?
Let's not talk about Arsenal. We'll reflect on it on Monday. We'll reflect on this horrendous defeat on Monday. Is there anything else we need to talk about?
I think we are. We're good. Okay.
We're good?
Sorry about my cliches. I apologise for that. But, you know, that's because these games have gone pretty much to type.
Yeah.
Or to form.
One thing before we do go, I've not done it for a while, but please, if you are listening on iTunes, please give us a rating and a review.
Yes.
It really helps us grow the podcast and it's greatly appreciated.
Absolutely. Tell a friend, tell an enemy on all social media handles at RabonaMag, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us there. And we will catch you very soon.
On Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time.
The world's best converting checkout.
Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.